Good afternoon. Don't breathe, please. It works, but if you touch it, it might die. it's kind of get moody. Anyway, I will be talking today on Hello Profiles, and the very important part is that on. And that on means that it's not a nice kind of a story which would give you complete answer, which is usually our style for the problem. It's just a collection of thoughts and small problems. We solve this one or try to solve this one, to go to another one, another one. That gives us a bit of a perspective on the problem. I will show you that. I have hundreds of those. First, we start with the kind of a general kind of extreme formulation of our situation. This is what we're dealing with. Crisis. If we would put down the lights, would Ooh, we have a problem. Okay, now problem, and I try to formulate it in a way how sometimes it's stated in the papers. It's not exactly like that, but you might find something very close to that. Hello profiles are too steep in the center part, and that steepness contradicts observational results. So we have a problem. So it's number one. The number two, hierarchical clustering model, and it doesn't matter which one, it's all of them, predict hundreds of satellite galaxies of normal galaxies. And that contradicts observations. Okay. Now, and this is those two statements, which is usually last 100 papers on Hello Profile start with. Okay. Here we have a problem. Too many galaxies and way too steep profiles. The result will be devastating. We have that. I'm coming to that. Are we trying to dramatize it? Look, this is the Durham style. It's a Durham style. kind of solution of that, or the root of that, of the problem, is that we have too much power on small scales. And let's kill the power somehow. And that will solve the problem. Let's see if that will be, and let's see what we're actually what we're getting at. And one is already hinting on that situation, and we're coming to that. Will be the satellites. There's one problem I never could write spelling Gurgurdani. But I think that the rest is fine. Now, the problem, you know, it's a long-standing problem which we recently, and mostly, of course, because of our papers, we're kind of putting in the frontier of science. This is a picture which illustrates in, the situation. This is colorful and nice, but actually it's all dark matter. It's a local group, 1.5 megaparsec radius, H minus 1, two big galaxies, quote unquote. This is Andromeda, and this is us. With about the same circle velocities, placed at about 1 megaparsec one from another one, and they have lots of satellites in between. Okay, there is some concentration on anti-barrier center, just as observed. There is lots of satellites in between in the direction of Andromeda Nebula, and you also could pick up, you know, your lovely or the galaxies real in real life, like this one we call it LMC, and so on. The problem is that we have too many of those. If you would naively compare one to one with dark matter halos, let's actually have a look what the numbers will be. In this case, I'm skipping the nice pictures. If you're interested in, I could show you those, even a movie at the end of the day, entertainment, so to speak. But let's have a look at what we actually have kind of number wise. Here, my plotting is a function of a circle velocity as a dark matter halo or observed galaxy. For observed galaxies, we have either rotation velocity or RMS velocity of stars. estimated from, you know, compilation of the satellites we have. We have about 40 satellites in our local group. Each one actually concentrates only with the few which we don't know whom it belongs to, so we assign to Andromeda, doesn't matter. So around each one we place a circle of, in this case, 40H minus 1, in HK specific is 70, around the galaxy, and count satellites. Now it was divided by 2, because we have 2 galaxies, and this is what we have. So it's a velocity function of observed dwarf galaxies in our local group. The error bars correspond to Poissonian noise, which is, of course, is underestimate of real things, but at least gives you an idea. It cannot be smaller than that. And this is what we have. So there is some nice approximation, which we could have a look later on. And this is what Siri predicts. We run 2 simulations, or we did a number of simulations. One is for CDM, one is for lambda CDM. And it is the same. We find central halos of the same mass range. And count satellites for each dark matter satellite. For each we know its circle velocity. And afterwards we do the same thing. Okay. And this is what we get. Here we start to run of resolution. This is just a freak effect. It's a power law. It's a nice power law. It's very likely continuous. And then we're actually continuing it even to smaller scales. It goes like that. Here now, if you start to look at the picture, there's two kind of the points to make. One, which is usually kind of overlooked, but look at those guys. 50 kilometers per second and up. 50 kilometers per second is a large major line cloud. 70 kilometers per second, something like that. This is what we're looking at. If you're looking at a large major line clouds or so, few satellites, which is observed in the local universe, in local, theory predicts the same number. It fluctuates by a factor of 2, as it should be, but otherwise there is no contradiction. If we don't have too many large Magellan clouds, it would be total disaster. It just as observed. But now if you look, if you go down to smaller scales, and the problem will start with 20 kilometers per second and 10 kilometers per second, and at 10 kilometers per second, a dark matter satellite with the maximum circle velocity has a mass about 10 to the 8 solar mass. Here, at the 10 to the 8 solar mass, we have a problem, or maybe twice of that, this one. Now, we observe different number, okay? Now, we have an interesting situation, and this is summarized in those three statements here. Red ball, we have a problem. We have too many objects in the local universe as observed, as compared to what we see. So the mass should be drastically reduced. The amplitude of perturbation should be drastically reduced on a 10 to the 8 solar mass scale. Should be really done carefully. Not to kill those with 50 kilometers per second. So if you, instead of a 10 to the 8, you take 10 to the 10 solar mass, you kill a large Magellan cloud, so we don't like to do it. We have already enough of those. So it's a kind of window of opportunity, 10 kilometers per second, 20 kilometers per second, but don't touch 50. Okay. Okay, now, the blue. We know who they are. Okay, this is the high velocity clouds. This is a highly speculative kind of a topic. High velocity clouds by number, mass distribution or whatever it is that we have for them, velocity bits, they look like those dark matter satellites, dark matter halos. Most of them, those thousand or whatever it is the projected for high velocity clouds, are mostly very, very small ones with something like a 10 kilometers per second bits, line bits. Those are small ones and the newest ones. There's a very few bigger ones. Overall, high velocity clouds have two things which is not coming along with the kind of a nature as being part of our galaxy or being kind of from our galaxy. The kinematics is wrong. There's some population of high velocity clouds which clearly belongs to our galaxy. For some of them, distances were measured because there's a star behind, something like that. The population of high velocity clouds which belongs to Magellan Extreme, we're not talking about those two, but this third population. Usually the compact objects, which kinematics, which means it's totally going along with the rotation curve for our galaxy, or differential rotation of our galaxy. And then metallicity, systematically low. metallicity of those high velocity clouds. In the literature, the number sounds like one tenth. In one case, Burton and Brown found a case of a large high velocity cloud with the metallicity, because behind there is a Markarian 204, as far as I recollect, with a bright spot behind, and the measured metallicity of 400th of a solar. So metallicity doesn't look right as it would be a fountain. Okay, there's the one. Highly speculative. Who knows? Maybe not. And there's a third option. There are dark matter lumps flying in space. Okay, nothing wrong with that. It doesn't kill the disk of our galaxy. It's unlikely that it actually happens if you start to estimate that. Ionization or combination of ionization and stellar feedback could actually remove most of those, or just kill those satellites, so don't let them become real galaxies. Ionization, at least kind of common wisdom, works really fine in the sense of killing those small ones on a range of about 10 kilometers per second, 20 kilometers per second. And afterwards, it actually is not sufficient. So if you need to go slightly below, above that, maybe star formation will help you. Okay, now this is the situation with the, so we have three options. Each one is possible at this stage. On profiles, it's all problem on those scales, 10 to the 8, 10 to the 10 solar masses. Now the collection, you see why it's on, it's just spread all over the place. Profiles of dark matter halos. And you know how actually accurately we know them, and what do we know about profiles? Different simulations done in different ways. Let's see. Okay, this one is the next one. This one the next one. This is the next one. Okay, this one. So started with this one, with the dirty picture, but it's mine. It shows that central profiles increase and increase and increase if your resolution increases and increases and increases. So the result was if you take 1,000 particles, which will be typical resolution, you know, a few years ago, and you see what kind of halo we get. If you increase now resolution, and this is Ben Morris, as usual paper, 13,000, 100,000, 3 million, it's all increases and gets steeper and steeper. Okay, and that was the formulation of that problem. You need to have lots of particles actually to see the profiles right. And as you increase the resolution, your concentration increases. The sample density gets bigger and bigger and bigger, so the central part gets denser and denser, and peripheral part is still there, so and concentration increases, increases, increases. It's one point. Another point is actually not about those dwarf satellites. The scale, which is written by my kind of dirty hand, you see, 17 kiloparsecs. This is actually for class of galaxies. This is 7 kiloparsecs. So this is not about our satellites. It's about our small halos. And we'll see actually how that comes into play. Just browse through all different images. Let's see the old one, Dubinsky and Widrow. The simulation of 1 million particle will be with the pluses, and the Navarro Fink and White fit is a black line. So it's very reasonable fit over large scales. Here, all the deviations will be something on a scale of about 10-20 parsecs. This one was, percent. This one didn't have correct shape on the peripheral part. It was still interacting, and there was a kind of a smallish group, and as a result, on the peripheral part, the slope is different. So it doesn't show, actually, that steep profile. Let's click on this one, Akamoto Hade, and I will skip Jink and Suto, which shows basically the same feature. So if you look in the abstract of the paper, how it was stated, the Navarro Fink and White terribly fails because we see that the central profile approaches the limit with the slope minus 1.35 instead of minus 1 for Navarro-Funkenwald. Okay, if you look at the actual results, Navarro-Funkenwald was actually a very good fit as presented in the paper. So I asked them, would you please actually show that what was the problem? And so they sent me that plot, which I'm glad to show you. This is a Navarro-Funkenwald fit, and this is the minus 1.35 fit. Okay, the big difference here, because the density here is at 20% off. Okay, in the first lesson, actually Navarro-Funkenwald, at least for those halos, and we'll see why, actually doesn't produce a bad fit at all. Okay, the reason is actually because of a different mass scale. Okay, but it's a kind of accuracy of the statements. Let's see, the recent one from Guinea et al. That illustrates another kind of a point, which is coming along with the previous results. They kind of repeat themselves. This is a Navarro-Funkenwald fit for low resolution simulations. This is this one. This is density profile again in units of virial radius. As the resolution increases, it gets steeper and steeper. So conclusion was that concentration increases and increases and increases. If you look now carefully what they're doing, they put in that error bar here. You actually shouldn't be looking what's on the left, that's below resolution. If you drop the low resolution, drop that point because it maybe gets suspicious. The curve actually stays on a high kind of on a Z curve, which is from high resolution simulation. And again, we will come to that point a bit later. What's kind of missing in this case, Navarro-Funkenwald never was fit to the final result. How accurate is that fit? They, in the paper, they actually say something like a 20%, and very likely that depends on what kind of halo you're dealing with. Now, let me jump in that paper, in that result, and afterwards we'll come back to the physics of formation of a central part of halos. One is how different, actually, Navarro-Funkenwald and Ben Moore's approximation with the central slope minus 1.5. The issue here, how accurately, actually, we could define, and find from simulations, the central slope. Okay, what we should be expecting. Now, this is not result of simulations. Let me click on it. Not result of simulations. Just is plotting one curve atop of another curve. Each one is a two-parametric, you know, it has two free parameters, which could be, you know, of your choice, whatever you choose. Now, I choose two special, that in a special way. Total methods are the same. Okay, that leaves me another parameter, and that I will fix as the same maximum circle velocity. Not the radius, but the maximum circle velocity. Okay, they're supposed to approximate the same reality, and the same reality is, roughly speaking, mass and how fast it rotates. And this is those two cases here will now depend on what concentration will be. So each one is normalized to the same circle velocity and the same mass. And I'm plotting for concentration here, 17, which is appropriate for galaxies. Concentration is the virial radius divided by RS in Navarro-Funkenwald. Okay, for cluster of galaxies, which is that plot. Okay. Each one is in units. No, the shape is different.
Well, the concentration is not a shape for units. All one of them is the same shape.
All Navarro-Funkenwald curves have two parameters, mass and concentration. Depends. There's two parameters. It's up to you to choose it.
So there's no shape parameter.
Okay, it's not shape parameter. It's called. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Okay. Hold on.
Not a different shape. In other words,
it's
a lot, but I can just
shift it. Yes, there is nothing physical. It's the way how we plot it. Okay. The way how we plot it. I plot it each one because it's Each one has different shape. Okay? Each one has those two parameters. You need to choose physical parameters. Right, the same physical parameters. You don't have to compare one with another one. Physical parameter in parameters in this case is the mass and the circle velocity. Okay? So those two curves will have the same mass and the same circle velocity. Yes, virial radius. Not over density 200, but virial radius. Okay, now, depending on concentration, what C we're talking about. By top hat model. Top hat. Yeah, but it depends on average density unit. Okay. And now, for clusters of galaxies, which is, you know, that quote-unquote cluster, for halos with low concentration, they start to deviate actually at something like a 1% of virial radius, and this is the slope, deviation for the slope. So here there is some hope to see the differences, but at the same time, for clusters of galaxies, we don't yet have a problem with you know, how steep and how not steep. The old kind of a game is around those profiles. That will be for a galaxy. And you see that at 1%, there's almost no difference. It's almost impossible to measure that difference. And this is why, and that Akamoto Hadde, the difference with 1.35 and Navarcan Convite is so nebulous. Okay? So it's not a surprise. So you need to run the whole simulation, millions of years of CPU, whatever it is, actually to produce those two curves. Okay? And we do it! We do it! Actually, my estimate that how many CPU years people spend on running those simulations, the last estimate was something like 500,000. Okay. Of course, it's supercomputers, but anyway. The same with profiles. Now, this is the profile is slightly better, but at the same time, we don't put any error bars. But you see, at 1%, which for most galaxies will be sufficient, we have the slope for Navarro-Fink Convite. And that scale is minus 1.3, 1.2, something like that, which is exactly what Akamoto Hadde claimed, but they claimed it's wrong for Navarro-Fink Convite. This is exactly what he observed. Here the difference is about few tenths in the slope, which is actually very, very difficult to measure in simulations. Okay. Now, there's another toy. What forms the central profile? What's the physics of that? We still don't know. This is a simply toy model, just to illustrate and at least kind of have a taste, have a probe, you know, what affects that. This is my toy. It's just repeating again Ben's simulation, but it's slightly different way. I call it evolution of a sausage, or let's put it a filament. Filament, at some stage, galaxies will be forming for that filament. There is a filament, and the material just flows along that filament and forms the central object. Depending on how lumpy that filament, density profile might be different, might be not. Let's see what happens when you see, when we have just a needle. It's a filament with a ratio, epsilon ratio of 30 to 1, 1, 1. So it's like that. In homogeneous density, 30,000 particles. Surprisingly, it takes a lot of CPU to run the button. Because it needs a very, very, very high resolution. It collapses afterwards, collapses. And this is how it looks in the intermediate stage. Before it collapses, and this is the final result, it collapses, it shrinks, and no velocities at the beginning, no velocities. It shrinks in that direction, collapses, bunches along. There's nothing new with that, so we already knew it in 1976, something like that. But it's, you know, it's still worth of repeating it. This is what forms. It forms lots of small lumps. Those small lumps now move in that direction because there's a difference in time scales. And now they smash and emerge the central halo. And this is the blown up the central halo, the central part of the halo. Very nice, very spherical. Ooh. Now let's see, again, density profiles. Arbitrary kind of a scale on the left-hand side. Bright magenta is Navarro-Fink Convite. Okay. There's no substructure, so to speak. From the beginning, we did not have any perturbations inside. It's very nice and smooth. Because it's very nice, it's smooth, it has a lot of wild relaxation. It collapses, it shrinks like that. When it collapses, it shrinks like that, there is a distribution of energy between different particles. That's called wild relaxation. And afterwards, it smashes in that direction, and it repeats again. So it builds, as a result, very, very kind of a steep profile, which central part may be even not yet resolved, but it's nicely fit with Navarro Fanken White. Okay. Now, the game, let's put small perturbations and see what will happen. We put small perturbations with the ratio delta rho, this is the rho, you see the written rho, equals 3. It's not 0.3, it's not small perturbations, it's a huge perturbation. Okay. So the density contrast, I put the sine wave in all possible directions by amplitude 3. So it's actually very bunched from the beginning. Okay. So why? It's no different. So why is that? Okay. The reason why is that is because now we have two effects. The first, we increased the phase space density. It's very, very dense now because you have lumps. At the same time, we did that violet relaxation because now that call-up doesn't happen nicely and smoothly as used to be. And so distribution of energy is now smaller. So violet relaxation is not that violet anymore. So because we have a very dense lump. Okay, density. Okay, hold the density. Huh? Anyway, the density of those lumps from the beginning already. Okay, don't catch me on this one. Okay, you're right. Okay. Density field. Okay, density. So the density was smaller, but at the same time, synchronization for violet relaxation was broken. So as a result, violet relaxation is not that violent, not that efficient, so it doesn't increase as much the density, but density was already high because I put the lump. So as a result, they kind of one compensate another one. I don't know why it exactly compensates and how long it will take to compensate it. Who knows? But nevertheless, this is what happens. This is a game of violet relaxation and internal structure. So if you have too much internal structure, you have less of violet relaxation. If you have more, you have more of them, but the final profile actually wants to be preserved in that respect. Until you start to play with the phase space density. Now, I put here kinetic energy. So no perturbation of density. Yes? I don't remember how I actually did it. The displacement of particles and you approximate how we... Okay. It just simply lumps the material. You move it on left inside, right inside, and afterwards say what amplitude and what density will be. So it's a big fluctuation. So let's put it this way. Okay. Now we put kinetic energy, which is the phase space density. There's no additional perturbation. So you smooth it. The kinetic energy, initial kinetic energy, is actually quite small. It's only 5% of potential energy. Now it does have a dramatic effect. Now you kill both. Small density perturbation. So the density is the same as used to be. But at the same time, I'm preventing it from collapsing in one direction because the kinetic energy of that side is sufficient or close to that to prevent the collapse along the small axis. So violet relaxation misses one step that the collapse in the small lumps. So as a result, the central part doesn't build and it gets in that direction. So this is kind of a hint. Substructure is important. It is important because it is part of the nature. It will build you that profile because you're missing the violet relaxation at some stage. If you miss that violet relaxation, if you don't do that, so you chop it off the spectrum in some way, it will build it for you. To what extent it will build, you know, to what radii it will go, it's a matter of investigation. We don't know. It's in this mathematical game. But that, at least given a hint what's going on with those profiles. And the central entropy or entropy of the loss in the phase space density, actually very very important. It kills that process. Random distribution. Okay, make it simple. You can build any realistic model from that. So this is about those profiles. So this is what we're expecting. We don't expect much difference between Navarro Fanken White and a Benmore profile for highly concentrated galaxies. For any scales relevant, the difference is actually very small. The profile depends. The building the central density depends how you miss this entropy, the physical entropy, or you haven't not. So So you, if you heat up, of course your entropy increases, so the density will be lower. And that's actually a very important step for certain initial conditions, because you might miss some of that, of those velocities, by just not doing right initial conditions. And I will not go into that detail, but that was a concern with the simulation of Jink and Suter, because it's in a small scale, looks like this is what that they might have in the way how they set initial conditions. But let me skip that part because I'm not here. Okay. Oh, we will do that too. So just that's coming. Okay, now on the sample profiles and our new results. So I'm presenting new results with our upgraded art code, which now has multiple methods and unlimited kind of a scale. Usually we take 5 levels, each one is a factor of 8. Improved Poisson solver, so the solution is significantly better, and 5%, and improved refinements. So all these small refinements were done because we've been concerned about the sample profiles and our results in a different group. So we checked every check it and check it again. There's not much difference in sense of changes in the profiles. Mostly it's a question of interpretation. So this one gives a particular case. It presents a simulation with a mass of a particle about 2^7 solar mass, formal dynamical range or whatever. Number of steps is half million, and of course it's half million is not all of them, because it's a hierarchical. Every time every refinement level increases the resolution by 2, and the number of steps increases by 2. So this is because we have that so many refinement levels. The highest. It's the highest level. The lowest level was 500, so it's between. Yeah, the shortest one. Yeah, and the shortest, of course, it's where all this happens. So it's important to have that time steps. We don't have any control. It's not just I'm saying, you know, I have set number of time steps. The code does it for us. Formally, the resolution is 0.2 kiloparsec, and this is where all this kind of a recent development, at least in our development, actually comes in play. We used to take twice of that, and this will be a resolution which we would claim will be real. The last drive was increased at another factor of 2, and we will see how that will converge in AC results. And that's coming along again with this curve, because at that time they did the same. What you're looking at is a twice resolution or effective resolution. Actually, the real resolution is somewhere around here. It's significantly higher. And if you take that the change in a estimate what is the real resolution, it makes a difference with the previous results. The halo is about galactic size, slightly bigger, but not much, virial radius. This is a Navarro Fankenwite core radius, and this is the concentration. It's actually slightly smaller than that, about 18, this is by eye, and estimate with the fit gave it something like 17.8 or something like that, it doesn't matter. The number of particles is 100,000. Highest resolution. It's the highest resolution. There is nothing special with the halo. It's how it looks like. This is the megaparsecs. Those are 200 kiloparsecs. This is the central part. The color codes the velocities. So the highest velocity is here. There's a satellite which is moving with large velocity in the halo. But otherwise, it's just indistinct. There's nothing terribly interesting in it. It doesn't have any big neighbors nearby. This is on the bigger scale. This is the 1 megaparsec scale now. It resides in a filament, which goes in that direction, and this is how it looks like. It's a merging rate, merging history. Again, it's non-discrete. It keeps moving with a pack. Increasing mass, it has a major merger event at redshift 2 or 2.5. Since then, it was increasing as it should within plus minus 1 sigma or something like that from expected merging 3. Okay, now this analysis of the same kind as Ben would do, so I would call it more at all style. So when you plot below the resolution, okay, this is 100,000 simulation, this is with the 15,000 and 2,000. So you have an impression that the concentration is here is lower and increases and increases and increases, and it's all optical illusion. Okay, now, what is the resolution? The resolution is decided, well, actually this should be 200, but it's tight. Okay, it's a maximum of 2. It's a 4 times formal resolution, or 200 particles, or 150 particles, something like that. Whatever comes the biggest. Looking at convergence. This is the curve which it looks like. So if you there's a couple of issues. Let's look here. There is a couple of issues here. One is stability of solution. Okay, solution is stable even within something like a 1 or 2. Resolution elements, so it's not way off, and a number of number of steps could be something like a 50 times smaller. Solution is stable, which means that it's not way too far from what you observe. If you'd like, you ask what is the high accuracy? You know, where is the accuracy? You need to go to high to larger distances, and you need to have many more time steps, because now you integrated many orbits. And you integrate many orbits, each one should be done with more time steps. Okay. And in this case, this is what profile we're getting. Okay, I don't have any indication. Again, is to some degree this is a judgment of an expert. Okay. Sometimes we're wrong in that respect, sometimes not. But this is how curves will look like once we do that cut. And this is kind of along again what Ben Morris recently had been doing in plotting. This doesn't plot any point below what we assess is the real resolution, high accuracy. Well, where is the curve? One atop another one.
But what you need to do is do your
1900
We don't have two effects.
No, there's no control of resolution in that code. It's very dangerous actually to do that because you start to run on another effect. It's a two-body relaxation. You cannot run high resolution simulation with small number of particles. It's roughly speaking, yes, but roughly speaking, it's a question of 10-20%, and it might affect. We actually saw it in some simulations when we compared with AP3M. Now let's make the fit. I apologize for the colors. Actually, colors were a bit mixed up. Now here, the red curve is that halo, and it goes to central over density 3 million or whatever it is, and goes down to a virial radius. Navarro and white fit is that white curve, dashed. This one, you see it's white. And a cyan is a 1.5 fit. And just to make it easy here, now this is Navarro and white fit, and this is Ben's fit. Now, I could do it in a different ways. Because in this case, Navarro and white was not terribly good fit. Well, you know what's that? 5% or whatever it is, error here. So if you push down Navarro and white to make it better here, and that will happen if, for example, the fit done with the constant beans, so when the number of beans on a Z side is bigger than in the center part. In this case, it will push it down here, and the tail will go below here, and this looks like what happens when some people actually do the fit. Actually, look at the picture, it's actually not the best fit in that respect. And it's because you're shifting your points in that direction. Okay. We don't do that. This is the fit which we get. Again, is it a good fit or is it a bad fit? Is it best fit or is it not best fit? It's up to you just to judge, but I think that there is not much difference between one and another one, which is coming along with simply analytically fitting all these profiles. This one has inside it 200 particles. And around here, it goes to 1,000, so resolution is not, at least in that respect, is not an issue. Yes, I agree with that. I'm not claiming that one is better than another one. This is just how it goes. Now, how much, you know, is it really important? Well, in price it is.
What was the mass material?
Mass of the halo is a 2 tenths of 12 H minus 1 solar mass.
It's a galaxy size.
It's still a bit high, 250 kilometers per second. Without info, but it's maximum circle velocity, not virial. It is important, and I know that because Joel convinced me that it's important. Because now we could actually look at those plots. Oh, no, not this one. Get out. Was that convergence study? Or this one? Okay. We actually could estimate. We can estimate the concentration of a halo. Without going to all these millions of particle simulations, because the concentration is not the density in the center part. Concentration is defined in a very specific way. Concentration is the virial radius divided by core radius. The core radius here is around here, and this point is well defined even in lower resolution simulations with fewer particles. And how much that affects, let me skip on that, how much affects the rotation curves. These rotation curves of profiles with different concentration. The same mass, but just simply changing concentration one from another one. One sigma fluctuation from one curve to another one. So we have a collection of halos, and they have a variation of concentration. This one is the median, and this is one plus one sigma, this is minus one sigma. So it's a heck of an effect on a rotation curve, which should be taken into account when we compare predictions of the theory with observed curves. You don't compare only one curve with the observer. You have the whole slew, because all of them for the same mass are allowed and are physical. Okay, let me go to the next stage. How much time, by the way?
Do you have?
Okay, we don't worry about that. And that issue, what is the concentration, how accurately defined, and does it have internal fluctuations? It's very, very actually important. Once you start to fit observational curves. So now we kind of address the point in a different way. Now, the first one, let me kind of show that. Of course, we could read it easily. It seems that we have this is a simple model, again, toy model. We have one number of Frank and White, another one number of Frank and White halos, and we smash one to another one. If the product, so major merger, we'll have a Navarro-Finkenwald profile. We actually could find its concentration in its shape, those two parameters.
If we know
the mass, in
no,
okay, I'm coming to that. You beat the head, just wait. Anyway, those assumptions, if mass is preserved and energy is preserved, how accurately are those approximations? This is what you usually do, at least I assume you usually do when you do simulation models. Okay, mass increases, so everything goes inside, energy should increase, and it's a nice kind of approximation here. Now, what does it give us? Major-merger. We need still to check with the profile actually of a major-merger, one-to-one, smashing is still part of and combined, but it's coming. In this case, 10 to 12 solar mass plus 10 to 12 solar mass, smashed together, originally concentration 12, just pick it up by hand, at a virial distance. Now velocity, relative velocity is important, and here is a different numbers. So virial velocity 0.8 virial velocity, 1.2 virial velocity. How much it affects the profile? Heck of a heck of an effect. In that formulation it's not coming. It's analytical result. Angular momentum is not is no room for angular momentum. Let's put it this way. It's conservation of mass, conservation of angular momentum. We will come to that. Okay. But the bottom line, it's quite natural that during collision, during mergers, the concentration of a product would change. So it's not strange that it actually happens. Until we stop. Okay, the answer is if you don't have a loss of energy or angular momentum, they will be different. Okay, the energy of collision is a parameter. And result is very sensitive to that parameter. What's the relative velocity of collision?
Right.
And it's not parabolic. That's the bottom line. Yes. It's a bound. All of them are bound, and this is the numbers which are there. Okay, let's.
There's something even more fundamental. I haven't understood. If you merge two objects, you ask afterwards, you know what the mass is and what the energy is.
You know energy and you know the masses.
Right, for a given mass and energy, you can have an NSW equivalent with any concentration. So I don't see how you can possibly determine the concentration
from that. For given.
Mass and energy, you can
make. That gives you concentration. Right.
No, mass and energy doesn't give you concentration.
Does. Okay. You can check it after that.
No, so concentration, you can find a scale rated RF that can give you that. So given the mass and the concentration, for any energy, you can find a scale rated RF that will give you that energy.
No, I think that's wrong, because you have another condition here. Between the radio, virial radius and virial mass. Those two conditions, mass and that define the problem. You can solve it, but in this case, I'm right.
Okay, I'll bet with you on it.
Okay. Okay, now this is a. Okay, anyway. So this is the simulations which we just. I'm not betting, you know. So that's initial profile. And that's result of collision. In this case, you know, there's you know, so many particles involved and so on. The final profile in a wide range of a scale, so let's say from 20 kiloparsec up to 100, actually quite reasonably approximated by that energy conservation, but not the central part, not the peripheral part. Mass is expelled. Mass is lost, because in this case it's not even parabolic, and parabolic it will be much worse. It's a circular orbit. Even in a circular orbit, it loses lots of energy. But the final profile from simulations is Navarro-Fankenwite. This is the blue curve. And there's the accuracy of Navarro-Fankenwite fit, or the final profile. So it's good news. If you have a merging, major mergers, big ones, even smashing with large velocities, Navarro-Fankenwite still kind of intact. Because initial was enforced in Navarro-Fankenwite, the final was not. The product of collision actually is steeper, and it's because we lost energy, we lost mass here, and as a result, now we're allowed to go denser in the central part. Okay, let me skip on this one. I think it's a nice exercise. This is another thing which we're still studying, is what kind of velocities we have, relative velocities of collisions. This is from simulation, we simply go in a big simulation and pick up all these collisions which are going on at a virial distance. But this is the distribution of their velocities. This distribution of all of them, this is kind of a spike and so on. This is here. So it's around circular velocity or virial velocity at that distance. Is it chop it off at a parabolic velocity? There's no collisions because they're just way too fast. It's a virial velocity. Это virial radius. Virial velocity – это virial radius. Yeah, gm over r. So you have primary, big primary, and you have a small one. You say, what's my virial velocity? And what's real velocity? Yeah, or small one. And what's real velocity? So divide one to another one. So it's about one, but there is a big spread. Those here collisions will lose the mass. Those collisions here with a small velocity actually don't lose mass, not much. Which is interesting to check what's going on with major mergers. And this is the distribution with major mergers. It's shifted on the left, and only a small fraction actually goes above circle or virial velocity. Most of them, for most major mergers, we have a difference. Actually, they're here. The energy actually is smaller, and if you look at the distribution of angles, they're more head-on. It's not exactly, but they're more head-on. So they have less angular momentum and less energy, which is actually surprising, but it's not even close to parabolic. It's difficult to argue on that level. This is the result of numerical simulations. If you think that it's 100% wrong, you might be right. But this cannot be.
It's a lambda CDM.
It's lambda CDM. You can do it with CDM model, whether it will be different or not. This is actually done, let's put it this way. That's actually not right. It was done from Colin Lacy simulations, that kind of a curve for average velocity as a function of distance. And it's going to virial velocity at a virial radius. So it doesn't depend on that. And that might be right. Okay, now we have 5 minutes for rotational velocity. Now, how good is the original picture of a problem with the rotational curves? This is what we get from the beginning. Okay, we'll know all of that stuff, so let me put on the slide. So we have a heck of a problem. Let's see, 3109 and 154. We have here, whatever it is, distance, the factor of 2 in velocity is the factor of 4 in density. So this is a big difference, big problem. And this is the roughly speaking Navarro and Convite, not exactly, but as close as we get to that. Now, that was not the best fit. And this is just in the first place when you look at the curve. We don't try to fit it. We try to show the difference. In this case, I will try to actually to show the best fit. I'm biased. No question about it. But I'm trying my best. This is one of the NGC 5585. It's one of Hellos which people usually defeat. Nothing terribly wrong with, terribly special. It's all results which is our best resolution. Just simple exercise. This is the rotation curve which is dots. Now I assign errors arbitrarily but not unreasonably. 10% in the distance. Move that curve to the left, and afterwards 10% in the velocity will move it right. So this is my kind of rough estimate where actually a rotation curve should stay. And either distance or velocity are not known as accurately as that. This is observational data. What? No. This scale depends where we place the galaxy.
Oh, you mean the distance error?
This distance error. Yes, which is quite reasonable. Okay. And velocity, you know, it's your peak. I pick it at 10%. Okay. 20% error in consideration for the fit. In this case, Navarro and Convite. So the middle one, with those parameters,
with the concentration value given by
the formula C18. Oh, it's nice. It's an effect. Christ. Okay, this is C18, which is the average, typical, well, slightly high for those masses, but not something special. And a virial radius is 99 and whatever. It's Navarro and Convite red curve. So it's not the best fit. Let's put it this way. It's not the best. But at the same time, is it close to what I just put up? Yes, with the problem, but much smaller scale. The last drive in all this direction, it's probably we already know, is that some of observational data actually a bit shifted and a bit kind of criticized and improved. And let's have a look at a couple. Now I pick up two examples here, kind of extreme examples. One is the 3109, and another is the NGC 247. And this is from Van den Bosch paper. Those two have something like 10 elements of resolution for the core radius, for the central part of a rising part, and overall something like 20 or plus for the whole curve. And they cover kind of all the range. Let's start with the good case. Okay. In this case, the profile was Navarro Franck and White up to the center, and this is the red one, and it's produced a very nice fit. Okay. And as all the rest of the components, this is a just simple fit for the better data, for better observational data. So it doesn't contain any single point, at least nothing which would be alarming. But of course, there is not the best case, there is the worst cases. This is one, 3109. It's an old one. That galaxy is in a peripheral part of a local group, so it's nearby. Degree well studied, and this is the rotation curve for this one. In Navarro Franck and White, badly fails. Okay, now there's one point. There's a few points which would be made. One is that I don't remember which one is that one. Okay, let me have a look what we. This is not mine. That one in Bosch. 3109, this is 3109, and this is the core. So it's not Navarro Franck and White, let's put it this way.
Oh, it has a core.
It has a core. Okay.
Right, put a core
into it. Yeah, okay, no. No, surprisingly, they're actually this one. There's the only two in the whole list that actually had a high resolution.
So
it's
one. Huh?
Okay, the inner slope, the bottom line that it is that checked the inner slope was okay, it's consistent, and what kind of a fit, it's up to you after that. But this one was... Oh, this is here. Oh, yeah, there's no question. Let's see, it will go like that. Okay. Now, if we decide to put all this warm dark matter or whatever, or self-redirected dark matter in one of those, we must put it in another one, because they're just twins. Okay. So if you would like to cover this one good, that one is a problem. And it's much better, much worse problem, because it's a heck of velocity and where it's coming from. Okay. What about this one? This one actually is a very, very suspicious case. And it's suspicious because in the central part, there's the two effects, neutral hydrogen actually disappears here. There's nothing to actually to measure. And you start to get suspicious how accurately I measured my central curve, because I have an inclined galaxy, it's something like that. And it doesn't have neutral gas in the central part, and you have 21 centimeter to measure it. What are you measuring? The first question. And the second question, I don't recollect.
No,
for what? Okay, this is. Let's see. We need to have a look how he done, but that's clearly one of the concerns. I don't recollect how it was done. But there's another one. There's another one. Huh? Okay. Inclined? No, it's a beam smearing. Okay, we need to check whether you fit, you put a hole in the center. He did. Okay, good. Okay, now there's another question. Look at the numbers. Is it 10 kilometers per second? Is it 5 kilometers per second? Okay, here. And there's a systematic rotation velocity. So it's a disk which rotates with that velocity. Okay. Now, that galaxy actually is known to have an active star formation in the central part. Active star formation, we know how stars are forming. They're not forming one at a time in a space. Okay. They're forming in the complexes. And they have H2 regions and everything. In the complexes, giant molecular clouds. When they form it, all these associations in any way you want, read the books. And the velocity dispersion, once that big cloud gets dispersed, you know, tensor 5, tensor 6 solar mass, when it gets dispersed, it leaves behind cloud of stars with the peculiar velocities, 10, 20 kilometers per second. This is what we see nearby. Unless that galaxy knows how to do it in a very different way, there's no way that there's no additional component, which is a chaotic component, on a scale of about 10, 15 kilometers per second, maybe 20 kilometers per second. In this case, we need to add those two components, and that curve goes up here, and it would be pretty much consistent, my guess, wild guess, but might be not inconsistent with either Ben Moore or Navarro Franklin-White. And the one case which I'm presenting now. It is a question of non-radial velocity, non-circular velocity. Besides, it's getting on. Anyway, my point is that we need to be careful in a very simple profile, because there is another component which might be hiding there, and I'm given another example, which is not a clean example, because you need to do a really clear, much better job on that. But the chaotic component, non-circle velocities in that respect, might be not small.
I'll give you another example. Maybe 1 by 4, which is the kind of thing people use to discrepancy. If you actually analyze data, again, in the way that Simon Bosch tried to do it, trying to do it in a much better way, something that is going to be so clustered, you have to find exactly the same. All the people lost in the sample are systematically underestimated by the impact of food.
Okay. Coming to Swatter. You know, I read the PhD thesis, which is still not published, I guess. There's a great interest. And this is the one case, UGC 4325. Again, undescript dwarf galaxy with a circular velocity of something like 80 kilometers per second. H alpha is here, 21 centimeters here. That area is where dark matter contribution should be staying in. And now we play games. What? His observation results. No. It's the usual way you look. This is his estimate with some reasonable mass-to-weight ratios, and subtract one another with quadratures, and this will get you.
So it just makes sense.
Yeah. With 1/2 and 2 will be this region. You subtract one, another one, and so our curves will go through that dashed area. Okay, now I cannot do it on the computer. This is why I'm using that. Oops. Okay. It's wrong transparency. Okay. Let's just do it in the most extreme way. Again, Durham style. We have a problem. It is. Because here I'm pushing that those points here will be as flat as they are. Okay. For that you need to have a concentration, in this case 35. Okay, no external velocity, this is this parameter. Maximum velocity 90 kilometers per second, this is this point, And here's how it goes. Because of small difference in the shape, Navarfin Carbide is better, but Ben Morse is above. And here we have a problem. Okay, let's push it in a different direction. Again, it's actually quite high concentration. Now I'm changing my velocity by 5%. Okay, and the concentration is quite reasonable. And those two profiles, again, on larger scale, they're just practically indistinguishable. Here we have a bit of a difference, but we don't know which one is the better. Okay, so up to, well, 2, 1, half kiloparsec, we don't have much problem, and then afterwards we might have some depending on whom you believe and what kind of curves we're assuming. Now, for that particular galaxy, again, playing the trick, for different purposes, peculiar velocities of stars have been measured as a function of a distance from the center. And this is the curve. There's only one component, sigma z. You know, it's inclined, so you measure whatever you measure, and afterwards you correct for projection, for angle inclination. This is the component of velocity dispersion of stars. Okay, now, rotation curve cannot get below that. Let's see, the total mass shouldn't get below that, what you estimate from this one. So now I take this curve, and this is the scale. It's, you know, it declines very dramatically. It goes to whatever it is, 5 kilometers per second, if you go to 3 kiloparsec. In the central part, it increases very, very, very dramatically. Again, it's not a bigger effect. 20 kilometers per second for one component, take square root of 3 for three-dimensional components, this gets to something like a 40 about, and there's a shape. Now, if we do it again with that curve, if I could find that curve now, and subtract from my rotation curves chaotic velocity, which is observed for stars, let's see what will be the difference. Okay, now it's your judgment. How bad is the fit, and do we have actually significant problem? I'm not claiming this is the best way to do it. I'm not claiming this is the final answer. But you should be careful with that. Because when you go in the very, very central part, we start to get another component. Either non-circular motion, which is one way of putting that, or chaotic motions of the stars which are there. Which, on a normal scale, this is a 20 kilometers per second scale, which is a normal scale, something like that. Normal velocity dispersion of stars in a normal galaxy. Peculiar velocity. Our star is moving with my WASI collection was, again, you can check, 17 kilometers per second peculiar velocity, something like that, 12 kilometers per second. This is the ballpark. This is where it starts up forming this, you know, that component. It might increase as time goes on, but it's a natural unit. It's the bottom line. You cannot go below that. If I see in a 3109 something which goes below 10 kilometers per second, which means that some component is going to be missed. How big is the circle velocity? And how good is an estimate and all the rest? I think we should be worrying about that. Yes, if you have a component which rotates, and it doesn't really care what kind of velocity dispersion it is. But if it's the same potential, in the same place, in the same 1 kiloparsec, I see another component which has a much bigger velocity, So maybe the galaxy is unstable, I don't know, all these stars are flying out, which is kind of strange, or there is some contradiction. So before we judge, and input and kill all the models and fiddle with inflation, let's clarify first what we're looking at. And this is my final. Come on. Conclusions. Oops. Okay, sometimes solving the problem could kill the patient. So, if we solve the problem with 3109, NGC 247 is the, if we put in some problems for particle physics, maybe that's not a good idea because particle physics will die after that. The convergence of Hello profiles is a bit different than what Ben Moret presented. Now, actually, if you look at the recent papers, that's not much different from what we're claiming now. But this kind of open gates for us actually to study variations of a concentration, because for that you need to have lots of halos just to judge, you know, how that. And that appears to be a key issue, because the concentration of a halo with given mass actually varies quite a bit, and that changes the rotation curve for given mass. Let's skip that Santa Barbara. Sometimes the central part of the slope, whether it's a 1.5 or not 1.5, actually doesn't matter. What you're doing rotation curve. What kind of approximation you're using, given it's a good approximation, it's okay. At this moment, for those high concentration halos, we actually cannot pinpoint which one is better, which one is worse. They're very close on those scales, so use whatever you want. For those who are doing some analytical models or something on a larger scale, Navar Finkenwite appears to be from 1% of virulence and up. Very good approximation. If you up to using Ben Moore's profile, fine. It's an easy formula, but it gets the same results on those scales. And it's not clear do we have a problem on small scales to the degree that we should be jumping and tearing our hairs and changing all the physics. It might happen that actually we're pretty fine with what we have. Do physics and do analysis carefully. Okay, this is my final conclusion.
You could add another point at the end here, but in the center, actually, the cosmic ray pressure and the star formation and other activity in the center would easily be enough to give us some very special support for the action in the center. Okay. And the galaxies, the non-thermal support is important in quite large regions of the gas. Because that's been another process that could hold the gas up.
Without dark matter.
Without rotation. So
I think we jumped a bit kind of too bravely in extrapolating flat rotation curve kind of techniques when we measured it outer part of the galaxy. If it's everything more or less clean, particular velocity doesn't matter because it's mostly rotating, you know, there's a small component. Gas may be there, but, you know, who cares? And we just did that very simple event in the central part when everything is just in complete mess, and we now we're dealing with that mess. And it's a nice and wonderful problem to tackle. Okay, but what bars? Bars is another problem. Okay.
Two questions. One is to bring up the Santa Barbara cluster. When your revised curve, did you run the Santa Barbara cluster with the
Mustafa?
Your argument in the changes that you made. I'm just curious if you ran the Santa Barbara cluster.
No, we did not run. We run one thing, which is the whole slew of simulations when we compare our results with ART with AP3M, the same initial condition. Okay, there's a paper which you can read. Okay, there's no significant difference given you reach some stage of resolution. Okay, and we're doing some with the Gubernata, just again running the test. I'm pretty confident with my results now.
Second issue is the small halos around the galaxy. I thought that Moore and company argued that the meaning of this would be important.
They argue, but they didn't give good arguments. Yes.
Right. Okay. Yes, I didn't know.
The last estimate was from was Andrei Kravtsov, and you doing that the two?
I think Simon did a good point.
What the Bohr calculation is extremely simple. It's just to work out, take the scaling of the rate of steepening, the mass, and the mass function, and you find it's very strong divergence at the mass of them. And at the low mass end of the mass, it's going to depend on your contribution. Of the depth by the satellite. So it's the first one of the most massive ones that corresponds to the main point of the
effect. And you basically place the disk in by hand. I mean, you're assuming that the disk is not by spherical radius, but it's not.
Just using the observed number of the function of mass, and then the way that the heating rate scales with mass, you can easily estimate which one is closer to mass.
we've actually done a simulation by putting the sensors to how much gas that we get to the impulse source. The only way it might be a problem is if you have a very thin, some galaxies you have very thin young, very thin old disk.
Very thin old disk.
There's no beam at all. But the same disk is not really fine.
At the same time, if you look at simulations, you know how. The number of large satellites fluctuates like a lot. So in some systems, so you just most of the mass will be in those few satellites, like LMC. So there will be five of those just flying around. In others, will be almost none. You know, there's a small number of statistics, not Poisson statistics. So maybe those just do not have those big satellites. What happens with our galaxy when? And those which get destroyed is another thing which we don't know when we just blindly compare with all curves with observation curves. With the preselection, those which has a high concentration, the halos, actually didn't become spiral galaxies. All the low ones maybe are spiral galaxies. We still have ellipticals. Is there any way to pinpoint the guys and say it's either kills or not, but it's a direct observation. It's easy. Thousand of those guys are in our local group, and we cannot tell whether they are not. It's impossible. It's some insane, you know. It should be something. Even if dark matter, you know, it should be doing something. Anyway, it's for observers. We're not observed. Okay. Okay, you want to see a movie?
Okay. So what is the movie
of? It's over. You're now entertainment. Look, this is
a
D5, all dark matter, logarithmic scale of the density, background subtracted, if a particle doesn't have a neighbor in some distance, it's not shown, and it's how galaxy, with something like 150 kilometers per second at that redshift, looks like. This video radius, C by I, has already satellites, the filaments, the group, and it's coming again. This is 2 megaparsecs scaling. Now we're diving in, and it repeats itself. So it's kind of informative and, you know, in some degree, informative. What I've learned once I look at that, and actually compared with Burton and Brown results, that those satellites, those dark matter satellites, small ones and big ones, actually come in not alone. They have substructure. Tiny, nice, and you know, this is a cluster by itself. And actually, it's observed. Well, it's observed once I saw the observation. There's a recent paper by Burton and Brown when they took one of high velocity clouds, the big one. It's a compact but bright. And they observed it with very high resolution. And they see substructure like 5 or 6 lumps. In some of them with internal rotation. Could be those guys fall and look at that guy?
Well, that's going to be a way to make the solar mass and try to get the dark mass to be connected to the solar rotation.
Okay, now at redshift 5, it looks like what we would be looking at present. It's not much different. The scale is smaller. But it has the same kind of a halo, the same satellites around, you know, moving and colliding. All that material later on will go to that bigger one and build it. Let's skip that one. What's interesting is actually to go into redshift 10. Observers still don't do that. I could play it. Okay. Unfortunately, it's moves slower because it's how it's done. No, this is the central one. You see it's kind of smaller. This one is about 90-something kilometers per second. And it's much, very much different. There's a filament which is much stronger. And because the size of filament at that redshift, the size of the filament, was about the size of the galaxy itself. 50 kiloparsecs, something like that. Plus, yes, they're coming to you. And that filamentary structure was the size of a galaxy. Later on, the filament from which it's the filaments increased. So the galaxy now occupies a small fraction of a filament. So you have collisions from different directions. At that moment, you have one filament like that, another filament in that direction, another filament in that direction. Very narrow ones. You see all those tiny ones. The box is a 25 megaparsec. The radius at the beginning is a 2 megaparsec Kamuvian. And afterwards, what you're looking at is something like a 100 parsec or even smaller. 100 kiloparsec or even smaller. So it's actually very, very basic. Kamuvian. Okay.
What was the K that you went to?
K?
The initial condition.
Christ. Mass per particle. Is it good enough for K? 10 to 6. It's about 20, 30, something like that.
I heard
10 to the 6 and then there's 20, 30, 40. 20, 30, H minus 1.
Megaparsec
1, K, H. You asking for K? The short distance again, I think it's on a scale of 30. K, in units of inverse megaparsec. But it's better you think about masses. It's a bit. Okay, for me it's better. 10 to the 6. Fine, what the fuck? Many years.
I came from Toronto just for your talk.
You just missed the.
What do you mean I just missed it? I got it. So let me see how you're doing this. Technically. Let me see. You were going to show the variation of the concentration with rotational velocity, but you didn't actually show it.
No, it's a variation of concentration as a function of mass.
About variation of concentration.
No, it's the effect of concentration on rotation velocity. I showed that. There's a curves. For the same mass.
So let me see what mechanism you're using here.
Which one? This one?
No. So you clicked over here, and the format is. So what is it?
It's a quick time.
You clicked on the media
player,
right? I'm going to be in the seminar.
I'm coming.
Upstairs, I think.
Uh-huh.
We need to talk about getting access to data.
Okay, good.
24 megabytes.
Heck of a megabyte.
So QuickTime is...
The same as Adi. The same as
so
Adi.
So you don't choose MPEG to do these
MPEG which I could grab actually have a very low resolution. So they have something like 320.
Are you using complicated compression algorithms too? There are various algorithms you can choose for compressing the
audio. I tried. The most effective part is, you do compression. There's one called, the standard Radiac or whatever it is. It's compression, yeah. The problem is that if you try to compress it, then the quality of the image degrades enormously.
Yeah, I know. This is great.
Yeah. It actually plays better in a better computer. This is the old one. So I have a new laptop and it runs like smooth.
Uh-huh.
But it's not bad.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna come to dinner.
You're not?
I am.
I am. Any questions? You know, you kind of everybody was asking questions and.
Well, I'll talk to you about dinner. I mean, basically, I'm still not convinced that there's a big problem. Everybody's trying to make this into a fundamental physics problem, and it may be, but I share your, it's unclear to me that it's a fundamental problem for the theory.